All right, everybody, it's time for a brand new this week episode of Plain Bitter!
Yeah!
Oh, today on the show, Trailer Trash featuring Princess Kaguya, Inherent Vice, Taken 3, Disney Pixar's Inside Out, formerly known as Untitled Disney Pixar Film That Takes You Inside the Mind, and of course, who could forget whatever that last one we covered was. Oh yes, Exodus, Gods and Kings, that thing. Ancient story to define the culture of so many civilizations and cultures. Also, comics, perfect thing to follow up Exodus with. All new Ghost Rider, Amazing Spider-Man, Learning to Crawl, and Thor, yes. I'm your host, whose finely manicured fingers were the ones that were, in fact, plucking Mjolnir off the moon, Richard. Over there, dropping things mysteriously into his trunk to teleport them into an auto body shop, it's Jason.
That's true.
Throwing up wind-up dentures on people during a serious talk, it's Michael.
I've done that a couple times, actually. Good Lord,
it's because you're old.
And taking revenge on the people taking revenge for the revenge he took on them that he took the revenge for from where they taken revenge on him for where they taken his daughter. It's Chris!
That's really complicated.
Sort of like the setup for Taken 4, as yet unmade.
Mistaken.
Yes. Mistaken.
Hey everybody, you've heard me talk about it in the last couple of weeks, but please be sure to check out Max Toys and Games. If you get a chance to actually come down to Portland, Kentucky, say be sure to let me know about it, and I'll actually come out and visit you. Kind enough to sponsor us on a lot of our comic book endeavors and reviews for the show. You can follow them on Twitter and Facebook. For both of them, be sure to look them up. They do have great deals and specials. Once again, Max Toys and Games, a big sponsor of Plan Banter. Be sure to check it out.
Well, let's go ahead and do Trailer Trash, because interesting assortment of stuff this week. Trailer Trash!
Michael's excited about it.
All right, Michael, you're excited. What do you want to do first?
Let's do Taken 3 first.
Tell me about Taken 3. What did you think of this trailer?
Okay.
Take 3.
Yeah.
Take 3.
Tech 3.
Tech 3.
Tekken.
Tekken.
Wasn't that the same thing for Tekken 3?
Yeah, it was the same exact thing for the fighting game, Tekken 3.
Because the other ones made a shit ton of money.
Taken 2 made a fair amount, despite people not liking it. I still haven't seen it.
He's gonna die. He's gonna die at the end of this one.
You think so?
I think so.
He's gonna die.
He's man.
Taken 4, he finally gets took.
No, Taken 4 will be his daughter seeking revenge on all the people who seek revenge on her dad.
Seeked.
And it will seeked. And it will be called Miss Taken.
Oh my God, Michael.
It's pretty good. You should get that in the writer's registry quick before someone steals it.
Yeah.
But
no, send it out to Luc Besson.
It was a horrible trailer that just tried to be the trailer of the past two movies to be clever. Because they had what's his face? Crazy Eyes.
Marty Feldman?
No.
Forrest Whitaker.
Saying the same thing that Liam Neeson said on, I think, the second trailer. And then
I Will Find You.
Yeah, and then Liam Neeson saying the same thing that the first villain said that's, whatever.
Good luck.
Ugh.
So this is Identity Theft as an action movie.
Ugh.
I'm disappointed this series didn't take the route I thought it would. It was like Liam Neeson just goes to a different continent and kills it all.
Yeah, when people ask me, is, Taken any good? And I was like, yes, Liam Neeson destroys Paris is amazing. Yeah.
Liam Neeson kills Europe. Movie one. Movie two, Liam Neeson kills Australia. Movie three, Liam Neeson kills
Asia?
South America.
South America?
Oh, Asia. Asia. Asia was a good one, too. Because yeah. that's a four-hour epic.
Oh, it is a four-hour epic.
Liam Neeson takes Somalia.
But, yeah.
Mogadishu.
Liam
he goes in where the Blackhawks failed.
It was a horrible trailer. It was a horrible trailer. I'm giving it trash. Hardcore.
Yeah. I mean, it says a lot that as much as I enjoy that first movie, I never saw the second one.
I didn't watch the second one either.
I meant to. I really did. But when I heard that the second one was going to have him kidnapped and the daughter was going to be like trying to save him in part of it, I was like, that sounds ridiculous. Like, why do I care? Like, well, like what makes the first take, like, what makes Taken such an enjoyable movie is that it is a completely obscene and preposterous and ridiculously yes. crazy 80s action movie taken to the most extreme degree you possibly can. There's yep. zip morality applied
aging,
to it.
By an aging
it's commando.
Actor, you know.
Yeah, like, it is hilarious. Like, when he's, like, driving, like, the truck through, like, the shanty town, you're like, this is insane.
It's crazy.
Like, the moment that will eternally define that first movie, to me, is not the phone call thing where it's like, I'm going to find you, I'm going to kill you. It's where he shoots the wife at the dinner table to threaten the one crooked police guy.
Yeah, that was
guy.
The best.
Yes.
And he's like, calm down, it's a flesh wound. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah, he's awesome. It's like, this movie is great. Let's keep doing this.
You know, it, like, but the part where he's walking through the boat and just, like, murders, like, 500 guys and doesn't even, like, concern himself with, like, looking at them when he shoots them. Like, that first movie's, like, truly yes. terrific. I don't know if it's, like, a great film by any means.
No,
I don't
no,
even know
a...
if it's an outstanding, like, entry in, like, the action genre
right,
as far as,
just...
like, the masterpieces of it go.
Exactly.
It is just
I mean,
incredibly
that's a,
enjoyable.
That's a True Lies and a Terminator 2. And
yeah.
you know, it's not that. It's just a fun movie. Just
yeah.
fun.
It's neat after so many, like, especially spy movies where it's, like, the cost of your humanity and being,
right, right.
like, a CIA agent.
Nope.
Like, you lose your soul. It's just
nope.
like, nope, don't got time for that shit. You
kill
die, motherfucker.
I gotta get my daughter. Let's go.
Yeah. It's
now,
not...
now he's, like, on the run, and it's less fun.
Yeah,
because
it's like The Fugitive.
He's
yeah,
not
that's
so much
what one of the
me.
Kids told me before I watched
yeah.
the trailer. Was like, this movie's just The Fugitive.
It's Liam Neeson is The Fugitive.
Well, I think I saw the trailer for this after I watched Gone Girl, and I was like, well, that's a it's a much different spin on it.
It's an interesting combo.
Yeah. They should have played the trailer for this in front of Gone Girl.
They might have. They played Into the Woods.
They did play Into the
did
Woods.
Did we ever talk about the Into the Woods trailer?
No.
Have you guys all watched it?
No.
I don't know. I don't have much faith in this. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't
know. Yeah, trash definitely for me on Taken 3.
Yeah, I can't get excited
the
about
trailer
trash.
Was just wasn't fun. It was like 3 minutes long. I know it's
yeah,
shitty
I mean,
to say it's long trailer, but I mean, whatever it was.
What'd you think, Chris? Are you excited?
This is one of those movies I would watch on Netflix when it finally comes to it, but I just don't care about seeing it in theaters. So.
I think Taken 2 has been on Netflix and I didn't even watch it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's less fun when like the when she died, like if she's dead. It could be a ruse, but I don't know. This who cares about that?
Yeah.
So universally trash, huh?
Yep, universally yeah. trash.
Sorry, Liam.
Comes out in that same slot that the first movie did.
Yep.
I think, right?
January, the yeah. Super Bowl.
Yeah. Actually, this one's January 9th.
Then no.
Oh, so it's 2 weeks earlier. Okay. The first one came out when we were at OhioCon and
yeah.
we watched it.
Yeah. Maybe it was. I don't remember. I don't remember when it came out. It was,
January 20th.
It was in January.
I don't
but
know.
It
I
felt
have
like
the poster
later
for it.
It feels like it was later in it. But anyway, okay.
Inside Out.
Whew.
The Great White Hope.
I'm gonna go ahead and say right now, I get what they were doing. I still think the trailer was trash.
Really?
Well, yeah. I didn't like the trip.
I think there was way. Listen, if you're going to do one of the classic, me and Jason were talking about this. This is how Disney used to promote their movies back in the day. But if you're going to do that, make that 30 seconds.
Not a minute and a half.
And no, make it 30 seconds and then have a minute of a trailer for the actual movie that you're promoting. Not a minute and 15 seconds of all your past
glory.
Sort of.
Well, Brave was in there.
Because Brave was in there.
What about Cars 2?
I think no, it was just Cars. It just showed Cars and it showed Toy Story. It showed clips from all three Toy Stories.
They don't dare show Cars 2. Ugh.
Cars 2's not that bad.
It's not.
I enjoyed Cars 2.
I know.
But
from a
and
from
then
their standpoint.
It just showed like two of the characters that they introduced talk. One of the characters screams. One of the depression characters adorable whenever she walks out and then just turns right back around. But okay, so what's the point of this movie? You know, I mean, I sort of get it, but at the same time, it's like Pixar has never had a genuine, real trailer for the first trailer of a movie that they've done, ever.
But this is like the first prestige trailer they've done.
Oh, yeah, this is their first prestige
trailer. I think the very first trailer for WALL-E starts with, like, the people who brought you Finding Nemo and Toy Story. And then they have that backstory of them talking about Joe Ramp.
Yeah, this is their single story ad, their story session when they came up for five movies.
Yeah.
So that was important to put that in front of WALL-E because that was an important story for that movie to be told.
And it totally made me think WALL-E was going to be at something completely different than what it was.
Yes. Because, I mean, they just changed. Well, whatever. Okay. Anyway, Inside Out. This is the movie that goes inside, the Pixar movie that goes inside
untitled
the mind.
Untitled Pixar film that goes inside the mind.
Pete Doctor.
But Pete Doctor was the good dinosaur.
No, that was a different guy, and he got fired, remember?
Okay.
And now they're all doing it. Now everyone is. The Pixar Brain Trust is, including what's-his-face?
Steve Purcell?
Is that it? The
Partly Sam Cloudy guy?
Partly Cloudy guy?
Oh, you mean Peter...
Yeah, Peter something.
Sohn.
Peter Sohn.
The voice of the brother in Ratatouille.
Yeah. And the...
So he's part of the brain trust now, huh?
Yes.
Intriguing.
Intriguing choice.
Perhaps not the best of ideas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But whatever.
So, yeah, Inside Out is Pete Doctor's, though. I don't know. It is definitely a secret life of blank.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't know.
The secret life of your mind.
Apparently, like, the special features of Monsters University, like, you watch them, and apparently all the animators and stuff, they look like they're dying. They hate their lives.
I heard that
apparently.
On the ANN cast, too.
Yeah, because that's what Zach said. I thought to myself, man, I really got to watch these special features.
Yeah. Because it used to be you would see those, and everyone was like, they had skateboards, they had secret rooms they would crawl into, they had markers, everyone was running around chasing each other with Nerf guns. It looked like the greatest place on the planet. And I guess now it's not.
Yeah, I don't know.
They don't really have anyone new coming in, I'll say that. I did. Because what's her face left, right? Brenda Chapman?
Well, yeah, she got fired off Brave. I quit too. Fuck them.
You know.
They took her movie, and everything that's in Brave that's not good is not her.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, everything we've read so far is like she had a pretty decent movie going, and they keep firing people off of these movies. And
I mean, it worked with Ratatouille.
It did work with Ratatouille, but it was just because I think it was more because that guy just wasn't ready to make a movie. What Jan Pinkoff. Yeah, he wasn't ready. I don't think he was ready to make a movie, and she clearly was. She's making movies
elsewhere. Made Prince of Egypt.
You know,
it's a long time ago too. 16 years.
Yes.
Did we lose Kenzel?
No, I'm still here.
Oh, I made the boing noise.
Boopy noise.
I don't know. I really don't.
I don't really know what to say about it.
I haven't unreservedly loved a Pixar movie since Up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just because, like, not just because I didn't think the others were good, but boy, Brave skated around a lot of problems for its subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Certainly so.
And there was some really lazy shit in that movie, and I'm looking directly at you, three little kids.
Did you not unreservedly like Toy Story 3?
Oh, wait, I take that back.
That is a great movie.
Yeah, okay. I probably actually like Toy Story 3 better than I do Up.
I like
Toy At the Story same time, I wonder how Toy Story 3 plays for younger people watching it that didn't, you know, have, like, all that context of, like, seeing these characters.
I think they probably seen
over
them
over 15 years.
Well, maybe not for that long.
I mean, I don't know how well, like, some of the shit in that movie plays with, like, a six-year-old.
From what I gather, the kids like that the most. My little cousins or whatever, that Toy Story 3 is their favorite. They don't like to watch that old, stupid-looking Toy Story.
It's the one where they're in the outside world the most.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, it's just I have no idea, but they watch it. All my little cousins love Toy Story 3 the most.
Hmm. I don't know. It was something, and I got two very different experiences watching it because I watched it the first time with John Dennis
Boy, those grosses though, man. 420 million or something. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's good. And then the second time I watched it with my parents and my sister, and like, yeah, boy,
I watched it with Michael.
Mm-hmm. Tis a thing.
I cried like a bitch. No, I did. I cried, legitimately cried three times during the movie and teared up about two more times.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, like I said, I actually like Cars 2. I don't mind Cars 1. I like them both. They're fine.
I think they're fine movies.
Like
here's my thing. This trailer was not a trailer.
Yeah, it was more like, hey, this movie still exists. We have something coming out next year. We're sorry.
But also, this is like my first experience seeing the characters. And
yeah, it didn't.
They look like Fry Kids.
Yeah.
What?
They do look like Fry Kids.
Well, they just
Fry
look kids? Like over-exaggerated.
The little pom-pom looking things?
They look like... Do you remember back when... Like, kindergarten.
I'm sorry, I just remember what those things looked like.
If you remember back in like kindergarten where they had all those little the people that were indicative of like letters and emotions and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
They remind me of those.
Mm-hmm. 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 Like Seven's depressed or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Like 7, 8, 9.
I guess. That.
But yeah, I just it was trash to me. I mean, it, you know, I'm not gonna say the movie's gonna be bad. I'm you know, it's a Pixar movie. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm excited for this movie at the same time. Like, this is not horrible. What they want to be doing.
Yeah, the trailer's horrible
because like, who the fuck is it for?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Is like, it for adults? Is it for?
Are you really gonna get kids excited by like, look at this? Like,
I don't, here's little things.
I don't think it's targeted towards the kids because it's like, hey. People in your 20s and 30s, remember these. All these Pixar movies? Well, remember, we have another one.
Remember the feels?
Yes.
Remember the feels?
But like, like I was saying, like, I mean, it does add a certain amount there. Like in the 80s when Disney would do that for their lower – the ones they knew were going to grow pretty low, so they would – gross pretty low. Anyway, so they put on – they tack on these trailers like that for like, you know, Great Mouse Detective and Oliver and Company and stuff. So people are like, oh, yeah, that's right. We make good movies in case this one's shitty. We don't know, but we'll watch it anyway because of the past. You know,
I don't know. They're not going to sell this to kids when, you know, right after it they have, like, the Big Hero 6 trailer with all these crazy colors and explosions and Fallout Boy and, you know, all the sight gags with Baymax and whatnot, taping up his arm where it's leaking air. Like, they've done a much better job of selling that movie, and I'm just not just saying that because, like, watching Rebels, I must have seen like 30 things for Big Hero 6.
Yeah.
I like the new trailer, the newest trailer for Big Hero 6 a lot.
So now Big Hero 6 is not Pixar, it's Disney.
Yeah, that's Disney, who's currently like crushing it.
Yeah.
Like, they're 4 for 4 at this point, right? Or 3 for 3?
No, 4 for 4.
What's the fourth one? Tangled, Frozen, Wreck-It Ralph, and what?
What are we talking about?
Disney animation.
Well, Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, Winnie the Pooh didn't make like incredible huge money.
Are we talking about since the money. Tangled or whatever?
I mean, guess.
Yeah, those three.
Okay, I'm
was
sorry.
Was there not another one? I swear there was.
That's...
Because Tangled was like 2010, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yep.
So is it every other year? Or did they not have something in November? No, they didn't have something in November in 2011 because it was the Muppets.
Yeah, Winnie the Pooh was in July.
Yeah, okay, so yeah. So I guess they're technically 2 for 2 on grosses and 4 for 4 on quality.
I mean, they're doing a good job. And, you know, I know Jason hasn't been totally warm on those trailers, but he was never warm on any of the trailers. For Tangled or Frozen or Wreck-It.
Boy, I was really scared that Tangled and Frozen were going to be really bad.
Those were the
I
ones that
them.
Was most... But then, you know, they were like, secret weapons coming.
Yeah, we heard that Tangled was really, really good about
Jim Hill
3
was
days
like,
before
Jim Hill
we
was like, everyone
it.
Says that Tangled is their secret weapon. And we were like, fuck, really? Yeah. This?
So I don't know. The low-key approach seems to work for that.
Yeah, so.
So anyway, back to Inside Out.
Yeah, Inside Out. So everyone, what do you say? Trash?
Trash.
Trash.
I probably, I don't know. It's like in the, it's in the middle, so I have to say one or the other. But I probably would lean more to trash, but I'm pretty in the middle on it just because.
Like, I don't know who I could show this to that would be like, oh, man, I'm so super excited for this now.
Yeah, other than
that didn't know it already existed. Like, I'm already excited for it. This did not, like, you know, I don't know.
Right, exactly. This didn't change my plan to watch it.
Yeah, the excitement reader, normal.
Yeah.
When's it coming out again?
Next.
June 19th.
15th.
Exodus, Gods and Kings, trailer number 2.
So here's my first thing about this movie. The gods and kings in the title is totally unnecessary to me.
Just calling it Exodus?
Just call it Exodus.
But then people would think it's that movie with Paul Newman. No, no one's going
to
think that.
Now, Exodus probably just sounds a bit too boring to them. So.
Is it too churchy?
Probably, yeah. You want to get the subtitle, I think. They know what they're doing there. I don't disagree with them saying. I mean, it should be called Exodus because that's what it is. But you know,
the Ten Commandments.
Yeah, you don't want to call it the Ten Commandments.
The Seven Plagues.
Because they don't even do that in this trailer, which is. I was like, oh man, there's so much to tell. They don't even get to the fucking Ten Commandments. It's just crazy.
Yeah, it looks fascinating to me personally. Man. That you saw the chariots going through the Dead Sea too, and that looks pretty. That looks like
their big pennants.
Yeah, that looks like it's going to be a pretty good set piece.
Well, look, Ridley Scott has a great has a track record of making historical movies, not good history, but good movies.
I've still never seen Kingdom of Heaven.
I haven't either.
I like Kingdom of Heaven.
Kingdom of Heaven's fine.
Oh my god, I did watch Kingdom of Heaven. I just blocked out of my mind. I did watch it.
Oh wow, you didn't like it, huh?
No.
What, did you watch the director's cut or the normal?
No. I watched the director's cut and the normal cut. Director's cut makes it a ton better, but
it does. It really does.
I fell asleep during it.
Well, that Jason, that can't be like a judge of a movie for you.
It's true. You're right.
I've seen the part where Orlando Bloom kills that guy for insulting his wife and then throws him in the fire and leaves. I don't know. It's too bad. I really would have loved to have seen that movie with Arnold, and I just, I don't know if I would have been able to get over
it. I know. It would have been the greatest. God damn it.
Is that who's supposed to be in it?
Yes.
In 1994, three. Whenever Cutthroat Island came out, which I think was 94. So, Carolco, the company that produced Terminator 2, had a choice of making two movies afterwards. They could make Cutthroat Island, or they could make Cutthroat Island with Matthew Modine and Gina Davis
and
Rennie Harlan directing, or they could have made Kingdom of Heaven with Arnold starring and Ridley Scott directing.
Yeah.
And they picked Cutthroat Island.
They chose poorly.
Boy, did they. I mean, for years, Ridley Scott was trying to get the Crusade movie going.
They should have picked
Arnold.
The Pauper's Cup, damn it. And not the Golden Chalice of the Pirates.
God, fucking. Man, Arnold in a Crusades movie just sounds like the greatest. That's why this movie's crazy because I know
John Turturro's in this movie.
Yeah,
I didn't even see him in the trailer.
Yes, he is.
I did see Aaron Paul in the trailer.
Oh, you did? Where is he?
He's got a beard on. He's looking at him.
He's Joshua.
He's Joshua.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. Huh. Bitch.
My favorite thing about
here's my Technicolor dream coat, bitch.
My favorite thing about this trailer was something that's not actually in the trailer because it came on in front of Gone Girl, and Jason was like, "Look at it, it's crazy. Look at the alligators." And I was like, "Jason, those aren't alligators; they're crocodiles."
Yes, but you call them gators.
But there was a lady like two rows behind that heard that was cracking the fuck up.
Oh,
that's great.
Because it was completely silent in the theater when that happened.
That's great.
That's awesome. Glad I made her day.
Jason, you just turned into that guy in the movie theater. Look at them gators.
Oh my god, those gators.
This trailer for me is definitely a treasure. Everything I've seen from this, it's just like it's like going straight to my
that
brain.
Stupid
you need to watch
music
this movie.
Playing.
I don't know. I guess this is a treasure because it seems like the movie's wild and wacky and totally weird, and I'm very excited for that aspect of it. at the same time, I don't know. I don't want to get too hyped for anything Ridley Scott does.
I understand. I mean, it's, you know, that's fine. I just, I think the trailer is, as you know, piece of marketing,
hear,
looks
I
great.
I did hear that Prometheus 2 is not going to have any xenoforms in it. But,
so what's even the point of the franchise at this point?
Exodus
this
is
the only reason people care.
Exodus will have
I would love for them to like go into a room of like some pyramid somewhere and there's be a fucking xenomorph skeleton.
Awesome.
Locked in combat with the skeleton of like a predator.
That will be the 12th plague.
Predators, xenomorphs.
And both. And the Cloverfield monster.
That's funny.
Yeah, the Cloverfield monster just rises up out of the Red Sea.
It'd be awesome. And Godzilla pops up and they fight. And then Moses tells him to lose weight, fatty.
American fatty.
So yeah, treasure for me, treasure for Richard.
Yeah,
Jason.
Yeah, I think it's an effective piece of marketing. It looks great. It's mm-hmm. cut together well. Mm-hmm. You know the story, and mm-hmm. it goes right to the point of telling. You know, getting to
it hits those high notes to let you know what you know. Kinzel, thoughts?
I definitely think it's a treasure.
All right, we all like.
There's one trailer I specifically want to save to last. Probably my most anticipated movie of the year.
He does want to.
Okay, yeah, so we'll do that one next.
I was going to say.
Princess Kaguya.
Princess the Bamboo Blade or whatever.
Tale of the Bamboo Woodcutter.
God, that movie's going to be gorgeous.
Does look cool, huh?
Love that art. Oh my gosh, that art is beautiful. The trailer,
let's see if it holds up for 2 hours.
Well, here's the thing. The trailer... The first half of the trailer was really cool. And then all of a sudden it was like, we're going to show you a totally different movie with a much happier soundtrack now.
Which movie is this again? I'm sorry.
Princess Kaguya, the new Ghibli movie.
Yeah.
Takahata's new movie. Probably Takahata's last movie.
Yeah. Absolutely gorgeous. That trailer, though, was very jarring. Like halfway through.
That's G-Kids, man.
I know.
What is G-Kids?
The distribution company that takes whatever Disney doesn't.
Yeah, they take whatever foreign animated film that Disney doesn't have interest in, particularly the Ghibli films, and they release them in like two theaters like the week before Oscar eligibility ends. And they always get something in every year. Sometimes they get in two. They got in Chico and Rita 1 year along with, I think, The Cat's Tale it was called. But the first time they ever did that was The Secret of Kells, for which I will never forgive them.
Ah, okay.
Because The Secret of Kells is like a really terrible movie that people champion as this amazing artistic triumph simply because it has really lovely art design. It does. And unique subject material. There are not very many movies about, like, you know, old-ass Celtic, Irish, you know, upper, you know, Middle English mythology kind of stuff.
But now with Finn Balor coming to the WWE.
There's not a lot of it out there, but just because there isn't doesn't mean that what you have is great. It really doesn't.
WWE Pictures presents Finn McCool.
Finn McCool.
Starring Finn Balor.
For real?
I can only hope.
Yeah, yeah.
Finn McCool would be something I'd watch.
He's named himself after Finn McCool and Balor, though.
The Spear.
Yeah, he's a New Japan wrestler. Anyway. The trailer put together is very G Kids. It's just like two adults, four adults, only two adults ever.
We are selling this as the most adult thing we ever possibly could.
Partially wanted to say trash with it just because it was so jarring. That mid cut, I'm like, you're trying to show two different movies here. Mm-hmm. Like you're trying to play it off as two totally different movies.
I didn't like it at all.
But
okay. Well, hey, I mean, the advertising for The Wind Rises was not good at all either.
It really wasn't.
It was really bizarre and bipolar. It made it look like this weird adventure movie, and they were trying really hard because they knew it wasn't going to make any money because it doesn't have any magic in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You know, there's like
except for the dream sequences,
zero fantasy, and that's what they emphasized in the trailer.
Exactly. The Wind Rises.
Yeah, there was zero fantasy stuff, and they knew they weren't, you know, going to be able to sell T-shirts and Hot Topic based off of that, which that's a real thing now, and it makes me sad. But they also know. I really don't think Disney would have released The Wind Rises if it wasn't Miyazaki's last movie. If they did not risk their first, it would have risked their any future first right of refusal
Yes, they had to do it.
I mean, I think Glassner still wanted to release it because him and Miyazaki are such good pals. But
yeah, but I don't. I mean, the marketing still has something to do with it. He can push for it, but I don't know how much he has to do with like actual acquisition.
Oh yeah, I think the marketing department got that movie and they were like, "Well, fuck what our jobs for the next 3 months."
Yeah, like what are we doing, man? Well, this
how
trailer
do we sell
is
this?
This trailer is like they don't know what to do.
Well, they've never known what to do with Takahata movies.
Yeah, I mean, no one does. No one does.
Like, and that's not me saying they're bad. They're really great. Trust me. It's
just the
only one people ever see as brave as a Fireflies. And they are, like, Miyazaki makes, like, movies that feel similar to one another. But Takahata is, like, he's like Spielberg. He will make a movie out of anything.
Didn't Takahata do, he was on the Grave of the Fireflies, right?
Yep. Grave of the Fireflies, Pompoko, My Neighbors the Yamadas.
Grave of the Fireflies.
What am I forgetting?
Jesus Christ.
Only Yesterday.
Movie. Only Yesterday, which I've never seen, and it aired on TCM one time, mm-hmm. ever.
That movie.
Why doesn't G-Kids get on that shit?
Yeah, you dicks.
I would forgive them for all past sins for that.
Yeah, shit, that would be great.
But, you know.
Yes.
I was just going to say, I really liked the symbolism. I really do love the art, but I love the, because I don't know the story of the Bamboo Princess. I know it is a traditional Japanese folktale. I mean, I know that much, but I don't know like the story of how it progresses and stuff. I do love that she's effectively a bodhisattva. You know, she's a Buddha because whenever she's born, the Bamboo opens in the lotus position and she's in the, you know, enlightened mode. So that,
they're running with that.
Yeah. Not holding back.
That to me was very fascinating, especially because you don't, I mean, that to me seems like it would be a very strong Buddhist folktale. And that seems like this is what that could be. And that really interests me. So I'm going to give the trailer, personally, I'm going to give it a begrudging treasure, just barely, because that, I will say that mid-cut really just, you could very easily mix the two diametric opposites that they were trying to show into one trailer without having all the dramatic stuff be in the first half and then all the pretty stuff be in the second half.
Now, G-Kids doesn't really have to do anything to advertise this because they're only ever going to put it out in like 2 theaters.
Yeah, well,
that's the thing. I don't think I think they just like, hey, what's like the coolest looking stuff? Put it in there.
Yeah.
You know?
Ship it out.
So we can get like, you know, like the. Like, so we can get what little casual interest exists for this, because the only people that are going to go watch it are, you know, like people that already know it's coming. I don't know. I really look forward to being able to watch it on Blu-ray in May of next year. Probably.
Yeah.
That might go quicker. I don't know. I mean, hell, they...
It would have been out for 2 years.
They put out From Up on Poppy Hill pretty quick.
They did.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they also released it in theaters in the summer.
That's weird.
I remember, it was in Chicago the weekend of C2E2 was, or Wizard
that's
World.
That's right.
Or it was C2E2, it was C2E2 because E2. It was gone when we actually were up there. Yeah. So it came out in like
we looked it up to
April,
go watch it, yeah.
April of that year, and it was out on DVD and Blu-ray in time for Thanksgiving because then we were able to get it for like $11 from Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Also, Chris, you say trash, right?
Yes.
All right, I kind of say trash
as well.
I'm saying
the trailer is trash, yes.
Okay. Yeah, the trailer is trash.
I know what you mean.
I'm barely there, but yeah.
This is the first time you've seen a trailer for the movie.
Fair enough.
I've seen, like, the Japanese ones.
Pullboy, Inherent Vice.
Go ahead, Michael.
Okay. No, I got here, Chris, first.
Yeah,
I loved this trailer.
You what?
I loved it. Absolutely loved it. I cannot wait to watch this movie.
Now.
I've never seen Michael, like, I watched this trailer with Michael, let me say. I've seen him watch trailers before, and I've never seen him more animated in my entire life than he saw this trailer. He saw everyone involved.
What?
You can go ahead. Okay. Go ahead. Just don't.
So here's the thing. I have read numerous Thomas Pynchon novels. And for those out there who have never read Thomas Pynchon, the best way I can describe it is if James Joyce and Quentin Tarantino had a love child who wrote stuff. I mean, that's pretty much Thomas Pynchon in a nutshell. Now, granted,
I halfway like one of those things.
Yeah, you know, James Joyce, halfway.
How did you describe? Would you describe who James Joyce was to Carrie? What did you say?
Oh, I said, no, it's that book, Ulysses. It's that book where he just writes random sentences about sex and drugs. It's Stream of Consciousness.
Yeah, Stream of Consciousness.
Yeah, Stream of Consciousness randomly about sex and drugs.
Greatest novel ever written.
Yeah. So I've read Thomas Pynchon. I have not finished Gravity's Rainbow. That's one thing I want to try and do before I die. It will probably be the last thing I do before I die. But I've read Thomas Pynchon.
600,000 pages or something?
No, it's just so. You know how whenever you take grammar and literature in school and they talk about like narrative structure? Thomas Pynchon says fa and balderdash to your narrative structure.
Fie on that.
And Thomas Pynchon is also famously known for guest starring on The Simpsons with a bag on his head, with a question mark drawn on the bag between the eye holes. Allegedly, that is actually his voice, because he called in to do the voiceover. But, you know, he is a recluse. He has not been seen on any sort of media in, I think, 30 years.
I don't want to be that so bad.
I know. and Thomas Pynchon
famous
novels.
And secluded.
Oh, man.
Thomas Pynchon novels are like, you know, they're notoriously not what you would think of for movie material. And the fact that Paul Thomas Anderson, a man who rides the edge of being so far stuck up his butt, but not quite.
Wow, like, poor PTA.
It's like he's lubed up, ready to go,
but he
just keeps kind of circling the asshole instead of going up in there.
Oh my God, Michael.
Am I wrong or am I wrong?
Michael had two fingers for this, everyone, by the way. So now you know.
And if you watch this trailer, there are five people that are named in this trailer, and there are about 37 other actors you're going to recognize in this trailer. I personally think it is because everybody who heard about this project was like, if there's actually a Thomas Pynchon book that gets successfully adapted into a movie, I want to be a part of that. If it's just for a 3-second cameo, my brains get blown out on the screen, that I want to be a part of that. And I think that's why you see Martin Short and fucking, you know, everybody under the sun in that goddamn trailer. And this has the potential to be either one of the best movies I've ever seen or one of the biggest train wrecks I've ever seen. And either way, I will be there opening night.
Who's releasing this?
Is it Sony?
Yeah, it's Sony.
Michael's super excited about this.
I am super excited. Because
it could be awful, huh?
It could be awful, and it could be great, because, I mean, I'm not...
That sounds like a PTA movie.
Exactly! Yeah. Yeah, because it's... You don't know until you go watch it. Like, who wrote There Will Be Blood?
It's purportedly based on a book by Upton Sinclair.
Yeah, Upton
right.
Sinclair.
Yeah.
It's extremely loose.
Loose, right. Loose adaptation. But still, it's like... That's not really a movie you think about making a book you think about making a movie of. I mean, you know, it's just an Inherent Vice, to be fair. I've read it. I mean,
good luck.
No. It's one that could be. Like
Breakfast of Champions was supposed to be?
I don't think Breakfast of Champions could be very filmable. But like
the movie stars Bruce Willis, guys.
Isn't
that fucked?
The Crying of Lot 47, yes. If somebody said they were making a movie out of that, oh, yeah, fuck you. Have fun. but this could be, it could be a great movie, and it could be a fucking train wreck. But with the people involved, I want to watch it either way. I really do. Like, I am so excited about this movie. This is the first, like, non-comic book science fiction or fantasy movie I have been super excited about. I mean, so really, I mean, I'm excited about Fox Hunter, but not like you are. Foxcatcher, I'm sorry, Foxcatcher. But this Inherent Vice, man, I'm in like Flynn, man. Oh, I will be there first day. I'll take the day off if I have to.
So how was the trailer? The
trailer was fucking fantastic. It was hilarious. Again, the fact that you have a weird voice little girl sounding person doing the narration of the trailer.
Who is that?
So Thomas Pynchon feeling. Let's go to the tape. Hang on. I'm going to go see who all's in this movie.
Joanna Newsom.
Well, there you go. I don't know who that is.
Mm-hmm. I like the gag where they're putting the, when they're, they've got, I guess, the body on the stretcher, and then the legs break up from under it.
Yes.
When they're lifting it up.
I mean, you've got.
And then you, like, drop a corpse. It's funny.
Reese Witherspoon, Reese Witherspoon, Jenna Malone, Joaquin Phoenix, Josh Brolin, Owen Wilson, Benicio Del Toro, Michael Kenneth Williams, Eric Roberts, Maya Rudolph.
She's married to PTA.
Martin Short, Catherine Watterson, Martin Donovan, Joanna Newsom, Serena Scott Thomas. Oh, my God. It's just.
See Kristen Scott Thomas's daughter?
That would be great.
Hong Chao? Oh, that's the, okay, that was the, okay.
Of English Patient fame.
Yep.
I don't know. Chris, what did you think of this trailer?
I loved it.
Oh, wait, you said you loved it. That's right.
Yeah.
I didn't even remember this movie existed. Like, I kind of forgot.
This kind of happened.
That PTA was making another movie. I really did.
Yep.
Hold on a second. The girl who narrates it is married to Andy Samberg.
And that's the Joanna Newsom girl?
Mm-hmm. She's a harpist, too.
Good choice, Andy.
Nice.
This comes out on Christmas, right?
It comes out like late November, early December. I think it's
She says, like, coming down for time for Christmas.
I think it's first week of Christmas, or first week of December, I'm sorry. Wow. I didn't realize that. Inherent Vice marks the first time that Paul Thomas Anderson has had a major film distributed by a major Hollywood film studio, Warner Brothers Pictures, since when Columbia Pictures distributed his film Punch Drunk Love.
Oh, so it's not Sony, it's Warner's.
It's Warner, yeah.
Well, never mind. Whoops. I just assumed it was.
I could believe it, because they expect a Punch Drunk Love to be a huge movie.
Well, it makes more sense for Warner's.
I don't know. But I say this is a treasure. It was definitely unexpected, because the only thing I had to go on from anything about this, I had no association with the name or Thomas Pynchon or anything. I just saw the poster up at work when I went in to go, you know, have like the, hey, like, what the fuck is up with the suspension talk? And I saw it was up and I was like, huh, have you guys seen the poster with like the neon sign and like the girl's legs?
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm interested to see if this works out.
The trailer to me plays like a goofier version of American Hustle and how they portray it.
Yes.
Well, that would be fine because you could tell that American Hustle was kind of meant to be goofy, but they didn't want to get too goofy because then they might scare off the Oscar talk.
Yes.
Whereas this, I think, could get an Oscar because of its goofiness.
He doesn't care.
Well, the only thing they let be goofy in the movie was Jennifer Lawrence, and boy.
Boy, she was.
She was.
Now, I really do feel like, I'm not going to say, I mean, it could get nominated for Best Picture if it ends up succeeding.
Man, if they do the 10 nominations again, sure.
But I do think that it has a very good chance. Because I think
they're still doing that?
I think Foxcatcher is going to get Best
Picture. No, they just do as many. They don't do just 10. They do as many as.
Up to 10.
Up to 10, yeah. But I do feel like.
There was like 8 or something last year.
This has a very good chance of, if it succeeds, getting some good Oscars.
There's some funny bits in it. I thought it was some of the things.
Did I hit you?
Joaquin Phoenix is very funny.
Whenever he walks through whenever he walks past the doorway, like right where the bead curtain is, and gets bonked on the head, and then turns around like he's going to say something, and then just collapses.
Does the flare flop? Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
I really that trailer was fan fucking tastic.
Oh, speaking of Paul Thomas Anderson, they do the in Selfie or whatever. Use the Supertramp cover from Magnolia when she's in the plane. The One Is the Loneliest Number.
Oh, really?
Cover. The Voices Carriage. Ah, oh, fuck, I forgot her name.
The Voices who?
She was in a band, and they sang a song called Voices Carry in the 80s.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. I know Voices Carry.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't remember her name. She's done stuff. She did the entire soundtrack for Magnolia. Anyway.
Amy Mann?
That seems like it, yes. Yep. Amy Mann.
I remember that from the special features of the Magnolia DVD when I rented it.
Right, right.
If I'm remembering right.
Right. Where he's, like, giving direction to all the actors. Telling her how to say you fucking know better 1,000 times. Fiona Apple showing up like a weirdo in it. Anyway.
All right.
Who controls the British crown? Who keeps the metric system down? We do. We do. Who leads Atlantis off the maps? Who keeps the Martians under wraps?
Oh, hi there. I'm John, a.k.a. Engineer Nerd. You may know me better from websites such as TVandFilmToys.com and AFBForum.com or from podcasts like Action Figure Blues. Well, I was listening to you guys, and I heard your Simpsons Top 10, and it really inspired me. And I got to thinking, well, I've got all this podcasting equipment, and that thing's got to have a tailpipe, so why not send you guys some audio recording of my favorite Top 10? So here we go. I'll start with a special, just like you guys did. I just to give you guys a little warning up front, I actually sat down, I started listening to the first episode, and then I stopped, made my list, and then went back and listened to the episodes, and now I'm recording this. So, for my special, I picked Treehouse of Horror 7. You guys talked about it. It is the one with 3D Homer, and I just love that 3D segment. I suppose it is a math slash nerd thing because, you know, it's the third dimension, and there's just a lot of little good jokes in there. The rest of the segments are okay in that one, too, but I've just always really loved that 3D Homer one. So that gets my vote for special.
Well, where's my dad?
Well, it should be obvious to even the most dim-witted individual who holds an advanced degree in hyperbolic topology, that Homer Simpson has stumbled into the third dimension.
Sorry.
Here is an ordinary square.
Whoa, whoa, slow down, Egghead.
But suppose we extend the square beyond the two dimensions of our universe along the hypothetical Z-axis there. This forms a three-dimensional object known as a cube, or a frinkahedron, in honor of its discoverer. Hey, hey.
Help me! Are you...
Number 10. This is a crusty episode. This one kind of sets up the whole Sideshow Bob as a villain thing. It is Season 1, Episode 12. Krusty gets busted. I think you guys said it, that... the ones where Bart and Lisa work together are normally pretty good, and this is like one of the first cases of them working together to help Krusty, but they really do use each other's strengths to their advantage, and I think that the interplay between them really goes a long way in this episode. Also, we find out Krusty has little tiny feet, and I have little tiny feet, so, you know, that makes me smile, too.
That man ate all our shrimp and two plastic lobsters!
'Tis no man. 'Tis a remorseless eating machine.
Number 9, Homer versus the 18th Amendment, Season 8, Episode 18. Yeah, I know. There's a lot of you out there that probably wouldn't have probably chosen this one, but I just love it because this is one of those where Homer takes on another career. In this case, he's a bootlegger. You just gotta love it for that. It kind of reminds me of a pre-Breaking Bad, Breaking Bad. If anything, maybe it inspired Breaking Bad. You just never know. Homer's even got a hat in this one, I believe. I haven't seen it in a little bit, but I believe he even wears a hat at one point. The part where Rex is standing on top of the hill and saying that he'll get the Beer Baron, and the Beer Baron replying, "No, you won't." That's just some classic comedy right there.
When I was 17, I drank some very good beer. I drank some very good beer I purchased with a fake ID. My name was Brian McKee. I stayed up listening to Queen. When I was 17.
Number 7, another Season 8 episode. This time, episode number 15, Homer's Phobia. And, you know, this could have been replaced with a couple of, Smithers episodes on my list, but this one is the one where John Waters is a guest star, and he is a pop culture nerd geek, and it kind of delves into collectibles, but it also happens that he's gay, and Homer, we find out, is afraid of being gay. So I love the pop culture aspect of this one and the collector aspect of it for obvious reasons, but that's probably why it's always stood out in my memory.
Oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, I dance with a gay! March, Lisa, promise me you won't tell anyone! Promise me!
Number 6, Bart the Lover, Season 3, Episode 16. I love this one for a couple of reasons. One, because I think this is one of those where, the family kind of comes together. Bart learns something. But you really get to see the interplay between Bart and Mrs. Krabappel. And, you know, I really thought that I wanted to have something with her on my list. So, I picked this one. This is the one where Bart writes her a love letter, and he ends up enclosing a picture of Gordie Howe, who used to play for the Red Wings, number 9, now retired. And I meant the numbers retired. He's been retired for a long time. But you know, you can't go wrong with that. It's got Red Wing stuff in it. It's got Bart and Mrs. Krabappel, and Bart learns a lesson at the end. And, it's just a real sweet, touching episode. I think it's one of the reasons it kind of stuck with me.
Hello, Smithers. You're quite good at turning me on.
Number 6. I love the interplay between Grandpa and Bart in this one. It is Season 7, Episode 22, Raging Abe Simpson and his grumbling grandson in the Curse of the Flying Hellfish. This one I love, I think, because it gives Grandpa a little bit different background than what we normally see him as. You know, is that gruff grown-up adult trying to keep a younger Homer in line. This one gives Grandpa some teeth and almost makes him like a Sergeant Rock type character, and I love that of it. The fact that they set up Burns as his nemesis in this episode, that's just priceless too. So there's Nazis, there's World War II stuff, treasure. It's just an all-around great episode. Of course, you know, maybe that's just me.
Oh, I'd sell my soul for a donut.
Well, that can be arranged.
Flanders, you're the devil?
It's always the one you least suspect. Now, many people offer to sell their souls without reflecting upon the grave ramifications.
Do you have a donut or not?
Coming up. Just sign here. Careful, hot pen.
Number 5. I love this one because of the song in it. It is Season 5, Episode 13, Homer and Apu. If you remember right, this is the one where Apu sells Homer some expired meat. Apu loses his job and moves in with the Simpsons. This one has one of my favorite songs in Who Needs the Quickie Mart. And it also has Homer and Apu going on adventures to try and get Apu back to working. So, good stuff all the way around. And, you know, I figured I needed an Apu episode on here as well. And this is one of my favorites.
Nacho, nacho, man. I want to be a nacho, man.
Number 4. Life on the Fast Lane, Season 1, Episode 9. I had a bunch of... This is one of the ones I had on from Season 1. Also, I had Bart the General on at one time, and there was one of the other ones. I must have really loved Season 1. It probably is also one of the ones I've actually sat down and watched all the episodes multiple times on, so that might be part of the reason. But this is the one where instead of we seeing Homer tempted, we see Marge tempted. And she is tempted by Jacques, the French bowling guru, and... this one has one of my favorite lines where he asks her out to brunch and tells her, it's not breakfast, it's not lunch, it's somewhere in between. I'm sure you love it, Marge. So, I love seeing her tempted. But you know, Marge is one of those characters that's never going to stray too far from who she is. And, you know, once she realizes, I think, what's going on, that she's got to walk away from that whole thing. But, you know, you just hate Jacques through the whole episode as well. So, good stuff, and one of those early episodes, I think, with Marge, that's pretty good.
Marge Tavern.
Hello, is Al there?
Al?
Yeah, Al.
Last name, Kaholic?
Let me check. Phone call for Al. Alcoholic. Is there an alcoholic here? Wait a minute. Listen, you little yellow belly rat jackass. If I ever find out who you are, I'll kill you.
You guys mentioned my number three. It is season 5, episode 4. It is Rosebud. That's the one with Bobo. You gotta love that one just because there's, you know, burns and a, you know, a robot body at the end of it. So, I think you guys have said enough about that one that, I don't need to say more.
There was a little Spanish flea, a record star, he thought he'd be. He heard of singers like Beatles, the chipmunks he's seen on TV. Why not a little Spanish flea?
Number 2, that also goes for this one, because it is season 7, episode 7, King Size Homer. The press any key thing, that's just classic Homer. You know, one of those quotable lines that, you know, I think anytime anybody reads that, they hear that in their head. And I think almost on that alone that I love this episode so much. Being an overweight guy myself, I can appreciate the desire to wear a muumuu, and a cool hat. So, I just love this episode for that reason. Also, the action figure of Homer in the muumuu, that Playmates did is pretty classic as well, because, you know, underneath he's got his regular legs and you can see his underwear. So, you know, for all those reasons, I love this episode.
To start, press any key. Where's the any key?
So that brings me to number 1, and you guys mentioned this one as well. I really think this is probably the number 1 episode all the way around. It is season 5, episode 2. It's Cape Fear. The one on the houseboat where they're in semi-witness protection and Sideshow Bob's trying to track down Bart. You guys mentioned all the reasons I love this episode, the hockey mask bit, the cactuses, the rakes. There's just too much good stuff going on this and a good song. So, that is my number 1.
What's that little helper doing to that dog?
Uh-oh.
Looks like he's trying to jump over, but he can't quite make it. Come on, boy, you can do it.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed this. I really enjoyed listening to those episodes. It kind of brought me back to remembering why I love The Simpsons so much. I haven't really watched any in a while. Not for any particular reason. It's just been a while since I've had the extra time to watch it. There's been a lot of other good TV on. So that not being one of Mrs. Nerd's favorite shows, it kind of moves it down on the list. But, you know, you guys kind of brought back some of the stuff I loved about it and got me thinking about it. And I really do appreciate that. And thanks again. And as always, you guys keep up the great work. Talk to you soon.
Comics. Dr. Doom has been around forever.
Black Cat.
TPB.
Fantastic Four.
First appearance of Dr. Octopus. The next issue of Avengers. Cable.
Ghost Rider.
Incredible Hercules. Comics. Lobo. John Burke. Moon Knight.
Mr. Hyde. The original Ghost Rider was a cowboy who had a flying horse.
Thor, God of Thunder, number 25. Comics. He hears rumors of the Lizard. Between Amazing Fantasy number 15 and Amazing Spider-Man number 1, and then Amazing Spider-Man number 1 and Amazing Spider-Man 2, and then number 2 and number 3. Comics. 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 Let's go ahead and do Learning to Crawl first, because I'm curious to know what's up.
a wrestling match is not a rock concert. Thank you very much. The crowd is not right up next to the ring. I'll say that. There's an area, a mat, where they jump on. There's a barrier.
That might have been the way it was in Amazing Fantasy 15, though.
Yeah, maybe.
But, you know, it also wasn't like a huge title card where everyone in the city knows Crusher Hogan.
I do find it hilarious that, like, Clash shows up in this super modern outfit, and then this is like all these old school wrestlers without knee pads on.
Here's the thing.
I love that. Just
I
so stupid.
Still don't understand this whole stylistic thing that they decided with Clash, because it seems like he had beats, and now it does seem like that everybody had cell phones and
everything
email.
Everything with him, YouTube, fucking, no pun intended, violently Clash. With, yeah. Like, I mean, like, guys, you can't have it both ways, damn it.
Yeah,
like, don't try to emulate Ditko and then put like cool rocker punk dudes with like torn t-shirts and tattoos
beyond
like, next to like you know dudes wearing like you know like the seersucker hats.
Yeah,
you know that have like Fancy Dan and the Ox cannot exist next to Cable. Okay.
Right. Now beyond that, the last issue I kind of liked the way the story beat went. That. His humor came from, you know, wanting to honor Uncle Ben. I kind of liked that little nugget.
This was the best of the issues.
I liked that little nugget of origin explaining. Beyond that, I don't understand what the big deal was. Unless Clash is going to be like some sort of major resurgence villain or something like that coming back.
Boy, that shit never works. It never works.
You
like
know
the
he's coming
one
back.
Not that great story in Untold Tales of Spider-Man is something they tried to do with this guy named Sundown. It was pretty much that exact same thing. Well, and it was an annual in Untold Tales and then an Amazing Spider-Man annual. And he came back in the present. And other than an appearance from Lucky Lobo, it was not particularly memorable.
Yeah.
And also creates major continuity problems for like a character that's a little girl being an adult in that second annual. Okay, so Learning to Crawl is kind of like... in theory, a lot like Untold Tales of Spider-Man, it is like a secret part of Spider-Man's origin that at different points takes place between Amazing Fantasy number 15 and Amazing Spider-Man number 1 and then Amazing Spider-Man number 1 and Amazing Spider-Man 2 and then number 2 and number 3.
Right.
And it stops before number 3 happens, which is the first appearance of Dr. Octopus. Like, I can see what they were going for. At the same time, like, Clash was not appealing enough in being like, what if Peter Parker was evil? You know, which is basically what the character is created to be.
Yes.
It's like, what if Peter had his parents and they overly sheltered him and he didn't have to go out in the world and experience all, like, the bullshit that Peter does? He would probably grow up to be a self-entitled asshole in addition to being a socially awkward weirdo.
Mm-hmm.
So while they have, like, Peter, like, using, like, a straight-up film camera... Because that's what he has to use, because this is set in the world of, like, those early Amazing Spider-Man issues that are set in the 60s.
But everybody else is using digital cameras.
They have digital cameras, cell phones, and most notably, Clash has a fucking iMac.
Uh-huh. Well, and he has a hard drive on his suit.
Like, yes.
It's like when Peter was loading film in his camera and he had it hooked up to his computer.
Like, how old and decrepit and poor is the side of town that Midtown High is on. That everyone still dresses like they're from the early 60s.
Man. Whew. Was this Brooklyn?
Yeah, like, I mean, the design of Clash's suit I thought was fine, even though he does look a lot like Spellcaster or whatever from Batman Beyond, except with a Spider-Man mask.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, there was, like, the stuff with,
he
like, the school...
kind of reminded me of Breach.
Breach? Yeah. You mean like the not Captain Atom?
Yep, the not Captain Atom. Mm-hmm. That Marcus Markeen did with God, who wrote it? Bob Harris.
Yeah, it was Bob
Harris. Bob Harris. Wow, yeah, yeah. That's nutty to think about.
Yeah, weird.
Yeah, really weird.
Yeah, because that was the thing he'd done for like 6 years before that for a while. It's good though. But anyway.
And then he went once more into the Breach.
Like, I can see what they were going for, but this was so... Like, so much of it was forced, and what wasn't
it really
forced
was.
About it ultimately adds up to nothing. Like, the little group of AV nerds, oh my god, I fucking hated them.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Yes.
Although, like, see, you're not the only nerd, Peter. There are other nerds, and I'm there. I coincidentally, the school counselor happened to be their club sponsor.
I did like when Clash like shot Soundwave and they said, "Get out of here, nerds!"
Like, yeah, I did like that too. Like when he came to the school or whatever.
Yeah, to get the chick that he was stalking.
Yeah, Polly or whatever.
Polly Pembroke.
I wonder if Polly's going to show up again.
Oh, they yeah. Who
really
knows?
Bother with the other guys. She was the only one they focused on, and she was like, "Oh, Peter, take me out on a date sometime, or take me to get free food," I think she said.
Yeah.
Polly McKenna, yeah. Yeah, the first issue was like Uncle Ben's funeral, which we've seen before in Amazing Fantasy number 16. Issue 2 was the first encounter with Clash, I think. Because Clash starts building his suit in the first issue. Mm-hmm. I read these as they came out, so
me too.
Give me some of the details are fuzzy. The third one was Clash attacks the science fair. The fourth one was Clash attacks the Daily Bugle. And the fifth one was Clash finally attacks the school. I don't know. There's like a certain level of coincidence that you had to buy into to read Silver Age Marvel Comics.
Yes.
I don't know, guys. Like,
it's a different era.
He seems to always arrive when Peter's there, and at least sometimes when, like, when Dr. Octopus is created, Peter isn't there in the room.
And I don't mind it. It's just, it's a different era. Like, it's you can't move on. It's a weird thing.
Peter hears reports of the Vulture.
Right.
Before he seeks him out. The Sandman is at large. He hears rumors of the Lizard. Dr. Doom has been around forever at the point that Peter encounters him in Amazing Spider-Man number 5. Electro is probably the first character that he just incidentally happens to run into, not having known anything about him. There's an argument for Dr. Octopus. And you can say that Clash created himself and sought out Spider-Man because, and that's how Peter keeps encountering him. But the fact that Peter meets him as both Spider-Man and as Peter is, I don't know, it's a bit much.
I agree. I agree. I'm not a fan of this series. I don't think it...
It had good intentions.
It did have good intentions, but it did not end up being...
When David asked me about it, I was like, if you can get all 5 issues for $3, it might be worth it just to read them, but I'm not going to say it's a classic. And even the stuff that was like was good ultimately wasn't good enough to overcome that. They even say in the solicit, find out why Clash has been hidden all these years from Spider-Man's rogues gallery. We've never heard of him before. And it's like,
because he just
there's actually no reason at all. Peter webs into a wall and takes off his mask, and that's the end of it.
That's it.
Like, did he go to jail? Did he ruin that kid's life? Did he go to federal pound you in the ass prison?
He'll be, no, what'll happen is Clash will be Black Cat's new protege.
Get him, webhead.
I'm waiting for Clash to show up in the modern day. I suspect that's going to happen.
Pretty soon.
Actually did this before within, ironically, another series that went back in time and tried to correct past continuity and make it relevant in terms of modern stuff by fixing it, as opposed to Untold Tales, which was just like, this is the 60s, everything's the 60s, everyone dresses like the 60s, none of this stupid shit. And Clash that comic was called Chapter One.
Chapter One, right, Chapter One.
Where the reason that the burglar is burgling the Parker house is because they just bought Peter a computer.
Right.
So Peter dies over a disk drive. Ben dies because of a disk drive computer. Like a hard disk drive.
You know, and I just got done reading Spider-Man Blue.
And how that's the 60s.
Yeah, that's the 60s.
Yeah, but it is the
60s. It is just the 60s.
You know.
Like, it is important.
Yeah.
Like, I'm fine for, like, you know, doing, like, something like the season one where it's, like, this is all those things but kind of updated in a way that sort of makes it relevant. Like, that's the first appearance of this reporter character that later became a supporting character in the Venom comics that Cullen Bunn wrote.
Mm-hmm.
She was in Spider-Man season one. That stuff's fine, but, you know, at the same time, you can just read that and then go from there. This is intentionally made to fit into those 60s issues, and this, like, has such a violent juxtaposition between the two of them, and it just makes me angry. Like, it's so stupid to see people having fucking eye watches. Oh, it's so dumb. And see, they did this thing where they had like a forgotten villain that reappeared in the modern day because John Byrne was also writing the modern Spider-Man comics. It was this guy that was in the same lab accident, because this was a big change in Chapter One, was Peter and Dr. Octopus were created by the same atomic disaster, because Byrne's theory was that there were too many atomic disasters and he needed to clean that shit up. And he also explained that Sandman and Norman Osborn were cousins because Ditko drew their hair
similar.
Similar,
yeah, very akin to one another. So, like, it's a pointless, unnecessary change. Just, you know, explain why two characters have similar weirdo haircuts. Which, yes, Norman Osborn does have a weirdo haircut.
Yeah, get over it.
Get over it. I mean, you know, I mean, Archie or Jughead still wears, like, you know, that weirdo hat from 1950. No one says shit. There's not the secret origin of Jughead's hat, though. It's now that you say that, I might actually like to read that story.
It's a crown.
I'd read that.
It's a crown.
Yeah, it's like a crown mixed with a beanie.
Stay out of Woolworths.
Or stay out of Riverdale.
Stay out of Riverdale. And you stay out of Riverdale.
All
right.
So
yeah, just, I wasn't a big fan of this series.
And boy, Captain Ultra sucked, because it turned out to be like a female scientist and a male scientist. Yeah. It's chapter one, and it showed up in that disastrous time where they didn't want to give Peter a divorce, so they decided that Mary Jane should just die. It blew her up in a plane crash or something.
Great.
I do think that the last issue... the last issue was the strongest.
Where Aunt May had the false teeth.
Yes.
I thought that was funny and cute.
It was cute. I don't know how completely it worked. Like, I think it worked better when they showed Uncle Ben having the colander on his head.
Yes.
With, like, with the fingers made out of forks. That was funny. That made me laugh. At the same time, I don't need an origin for Peter to make jokes.
Oh, my God. I know. I was like, hey, this is a good idea. I should use this to mask any impending danger.
Yeah, it's not I'm going to avenge his death, I'm going to honor it
or
whatever.
But, you know, at the same time,
it makes Peter too well-adjusted for, like, Peter in, like, the following 34 issues of Spider-Man.
I also feel like, you know, it could be a way to... Was Peter always so damn funny and sarcastic, you know, or tries to be so funny and sarcastic? Well, this is why.
Well, you know, just to, like he was a wrestler, and you're a wrestler, you have a gimmick and a mask. It's just playing the gimmick, right?
Well, there's the whole dichotomy of, like, Spider-Man is the aggressive, socially active personality that Peter wishes he could be. It's the whole, you know, secret identity dichotomy that exists at the core of, you know,
as Stone Cold
almost
says,
all superhero fiction ever.
It's his personality turned up to 11.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, like, and Superman actually reverses that.
Yeah, that's the neat thing.
He has to be the nerd.
Yeah, he's got to be a dork.
He has to force himself to be a dork.
Yeah.
And being cool just comes naturally to him.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, like, they do the same thing where, like, sometimes in some versions of Batman, they allow Bruce Wayne to be goofy. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time people fucking hate that because Batman can have no levity ever.
Don't laugh!
And yet they also do it in the Dark Knight movies.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So
those are good.
But, yeah, I wish I could recommend this.
Yeah.
Slott can't write multiple books a month, I think. You know, maybe he should just stick to one or two. And you can tell he's stretched thin because Gage was co-writing those Superior issues, which are excellent.
Yeah.
I did like them a lot.
So, Ghost Rider?
Yes. Save Thor for last. Let's do Ghost Rider. I didn't realize Ghost Rider number 6 was the first part of a new arc. I thought it was like one of those mini bridge issues that they would just wrap into the TPB akin to what they did with Thor God of Thunder and like... A lot of other things where they do a 5-issue arc, a single issue, and then the start of the next 5-issue arc.
So what issue is it canceled at?
I don't know. People think it's going to be canceled at 12. Which makes me sad, because I actually like the book.
It is awesome.
I ended up really liking it by the end. I liked it. It was good.
It's an enjoyable book.
It was.
They spend all this time establishing, like, this grumpy guy as this uncontrollable, crazy mutant threat, and then Mr. Hyde rips him in half, and there's blood and pills everywhere.
That was
great. And it was like, whoa, shit.
And then they do that Akira moment.
Oh, whenever Grumpy, like, becomes a Manhattan skyscraper-sized monster after he eats all the pills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With the four arms.
He looks like Haku.
His name is Robbie Reyes, right?
Yeah, the Ghost Rider.
Yeah,
Roberto Reyes. I really like him a lot.
I love him a lot. I want to know who Eli is, the demon.
Yeah, the spirit.
Yeah, the spirit.
Eli Morrow.
Because I love the fact that the spirit kind of has a brotherly protection towards Eli or towards Robbie's brother too. Like, man, you could really go down a very bad path having a mentally challenged brother like that. And that book has done an excellent job.
It is consistently sweet,
like, yeah,
and
of
cool,
not,
it really
of not
is.
Making
and
it
non-exploitative.
Yes,
and it's just, you know, it's
it
a thing.
Was phenomenal.
It's and, yep. really cool, and it's really hard to pull that shit off. It's super slick in that respect.
It, yeah, the
art.
You like
is,
that that little family unit a lot.
Yes, the they, art is absolutely gorgeous.
He works really hard.
He does well, and you
he's
know,
a, he's
what,
a good character.
That's what I liked too. Is that as he was succeeding as Ghost Rider, his grades still went up. The social worker was like, "You're doing great with your brother." I'm like, "Huh?" You know, that's kind of neat.
Yeah, and Ghost Rider's not eating his soul.
Yeah,
yeah, it's great because he has some semblance of control over it. It's just that's a real hero
it's,
there. You
it's
know, that's
a
awesome.
Really neat.
It's a neat take
for
on
Ghost
it.
Rider.
And I did agree with the girls. When they were like, we liked him. I liked him better with the streak in his hair.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was a better gimmick.
Yeah,
than
boys
just a
always shave
head.
Their head.
Yeah, he should probably grow that back. But I guess he's canceled anyways. It doesn't matter. But I don't know. I ended up really liking this book a lot. I thought colors are look awesome.
Oh, that's Val.
Colors look great, man. Yeah,
yeah, it's Val.
It just looks like candy.
It's a cool looking book, and it takes a little bit for Tradmore's art to like
to really balance.
Yeah, to grow. Like it grew on me, and eventually, like by that last issue, I was like, "Damn, this,
yeah."
This is, like the guy knows like some sick fucking layouts.
Well, and plus,
and that's obvious from the
staging,
first issue.
Like, staging an awesome action scene. Is,
you
like,
feel
looks
the
great.
You feel the speed of the car. You feel the motion. You know, like. I still love whenever
he flips the car.
When he flips the car in like the second issue or whatever.
Yeah.
But I also love whenever he's just standing and the car just drives through him and he's got his hands out and is just in the car.
Yeah, he just phases into the driver's seat.
Yeah, it's cool. Fucking awesome. It was a great book. I really thoroughly enjoyed this book.
There's like a panel of Dr. Zabo getting out of his limo where like the light's just hitting his glasses and it's like an up angle and it's like that's the coolest looking
shit. it was really cool
like
looking.
They do, you know, like the Gendo thing where you can't see his pupils or whatever because of the light off of his glasses, but it's very 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 cool.
Mm-hmm.
Some cool art in this book,
and man, that's the
it's
most
highly
interesting,
stylized
that's
very
the
stylized.
Most interesting I've seen Miss Dr. Zabo and Mr. Hyde.
Oh hey, I like Mr. Hyde.
I mean, well no, but I'm saying it was a very interesting like way that they played it because they could talk to themselves in their head.
Yeah, see, I've never not used to them being separate personalities. That's a new thing, but at the same time, I don't give a shit. Whatever.
It worked well, though. I mean, you know.
He can start going slowly crazier and crazier because Mr. Hyde is like a smart guy who's just a big thug.
Right.
Did you notice
people have
the,
run with that in different ways over the years?
You know, it was a good moment when the bus crashes and the bullies like help all the kids out.
Yes,
because you know they were bullies.
Yes,
yeah, they were shitheads.
But they still care about them as a character.
Yeah,
after that, you know,
because,
that's a good moment
because they're kids in an environment that's how they survive in that environment.
Yeah. It's very important to like as to establish what is evil and what are just human beings and learning, and they're creating dynamic characters all around the book.
And yes, Robbie beat the holy shit out of the bullies, but he didn't kill them.
He didn't kill them.
And I like that because they
he
even
threw them up in the space of like blowing out a candle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he just throws the chair into that portal.
Mm-hmm. It was a very well done book.
It really was a good book. And I liked it. Marvel's done a surprising job of establishing these new characters in older mantles,
like Kamala Khan,
and if they want to spin them off and to be something different, you know, they could.
Oh, I told you know,
like
I,
Guy Gardner is a good enough character; he could be anything. It doesn't matter if he's Green Lantern or not.
I totally can see something very soon, like if. Because I don't know if Ms. Marvel will keep going or whatever. I could totally see
Ms. Marvel's doing just fine.
I could totally see them doing a team book.
Yeah, doing really well.
I could totally see them doing a team book, though, of some of these all-new characters, like with Kamala and Ghost Rider and a lot of them and stuff. Because, well, I mean, to be perfectly honest, it would not be a bad thing to have a team filled with minorities, you know, that are...
So were the Avengers Academy.
Yeah, Avengers Academy.
Put Miles Morales on it.
Yeah, Miles Morales. I mean, you know, so.
But I mean, yeah, but Ghost Rider is like establishing not just like a new Ghost Rider, but
and
a new character in the Marvel Universe.
You know, what I thought was really fascinating, too, is I didn't read it the first time I read through. I reread through Ghost Rider like today. And I read the end pages of the first issue, and he was like, you know, there's not really any other better stories I could tell with Johnny Blaze or Danny Ketch. People have told stories about them for years and years and years.
And also, they're just essentially they're just guys,
right? They've done their job. People have an idea of them in their head, so let's do something different.
Yeah.
And I was like, because the original Ghost Rider was a cowboy who had a flaming horse. And then you went from the horse to the motorcycle, and he was like, let's do the Fast and the Furious thing. Let's do a muscle car, you know. And, God, it works. It works really well.
Yeah, it's a smart decision to do the car thing, you know. That was a good decision.
It's a cool book, and I'm sad that it apparently has not been well-received sales-wise. I don't know, a lot of the all-new Marvel Now stuff hasn't really, apparently hit the mark as far as sales goes. Apparently, Elektra's on the chopping block, too.
Yeah.
You know, I like the first issue of Elektra. I don't know how much more of it I need to read. I might pick up some books in a 99-cent sale.
I will say Black Widow's been fairly consistently good, though.
I don't know how there's twice the number of issues of Punisher and Black Widow as there are of everything else.
Yeah.
Oh, She-Hulk as well.
And, you know, I think this is this
has
is
it really been a year?
I feel like it has.
Almost. But, yeah.
Ghost Rider started in, July.
It was a great book. It was a great book.
It was in May.
Yeah.
It was Free Comic Book Day. Because that's what we got it at.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Free Comic Book Day, yeah.
The first two were out.
Yeah, when we surprised Kenzel.
So, yeah, no, it's a cool book, and it's worth checking out.
Recommend
it. That they have somewhere for this character to do something.
If you, maybe just in time, you can, we can convince enough people to read the book. So go convince them to read the book.
Well, if they do cancel it at 12, then there'll be a trade
omnibus. Don't tell me that fucking X-Men is more worth publishing than this. Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, Brian Wood's X-Men?
Well, it's no longer Brian Wood now. It's some. I actually think it's Mark Guggenheim. But yeah, no one cared about that book ever.
Yeah. No.
I mean, no one gives a shit about Moon Knight now that Brian Wood's writing it. I don't know really now how many people cared when Warren Ellis was, other than,
oh, there's some people.
Yeah.
There's some people.
Who?
Let's show you. Hold on.
Well, okay.
It was well acclaimed in the comics press, the Ellis Moon Knight, but I think the book was not good. Right. I liked it more than you guys did.
Oh, yeah.
They just said on Bleeding Cool that Fantastic Four will be canceled in 2015.
Shocker.
The book.
What do you know?
Fantastic Forever. Forever. Four. F-O-U-R.
I mean, it'll be back in 2016. Meanwhile, the thing's going to join the Avengers again, and it's not really going to serve
any
purpose.
Well, and apparently Sue is joining the Illuminati Hunters.
Oh, yeah. Time runs out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how Time Runs Out is going to match with anything, because apparently, the next issue of Avengers is for 7 months to die or whatever, is next week. Are they doing them every 2 weeks?
I guess.
Thor God of Thunder number 25, and just plain old Thor number 1. Wow, that 25 issue is interesting.
I liked it.
It wasn't bad. It was just hey, this is the last issue of the book. Here's all this setup for all these stories coming in the new number 1 next week.
Yeah.
I
really like 24. Issue 24 was really good.
Are you talking about 24 or 25?
I said I really like 24.
24 is the epilogue of the last days of Midgard.
Yes.
Right, but not so much 25.
I like 25 just perfectly fine. I thought that was really, because again, I think that book was there to say, just because we're starting a new number one does not mean we're leaving any of these plot lines going, or any of these plot lines alone.
Chris, I'm with you. I felt it was a little, I thought it was a little, it was a weird book.
It was
just
very exposition.
I didn't like the art either.
Yeah, it just was,
I liked it.
I don't know. I mean,
the art
was different.
They had three different guys do it. Isad Erbeck obviously does the frame story and the story of Thor being unworthy or whatever I think they called it.
I didn't think it was bad or anything. I just felt like it was there.
Malekith's origin story was, I don't know, it's weird. Because I realized, why are they telling Malekith's origin story? And then I was like, oh wait, he's never had one.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Jesus, really?
Yeah.
He's never had one. He's just never been a dark elf king. That's all he's ever
been. He's been an evil bad guy.
All right.
He's been boot Loki, I guess, in a lot of ways. I don't know. It's weird. Jason Aaron's take with Malekith, I don't know if I'm super in love with, because it makes him hyperactively, psychotically ridiculous horror movie violent in a way that just seems like it's trying very hard to me. And I actually like Malekith as the frustrated, goofy, comical Loki-type character that he was in Incredible Hercules, where he gets punked.
I love that. But to me, the way that he has set up the Dark Elves, it works. Because he set up the Dark Elves to be totally immoral.
Yeah, they're an awful place where people eat bugs. Don't forget to eat bugs, yeah, because they're going to tell you they eat bugs like every 2 seconds.
Right. Chomp, chomp.
But I don't know. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the prologue. I enjoyed the fact that they're saying, you know, hey, don't forget, Thor's going to turn into this awesomely badass, you know, future Thor in a couple of million years. But he was also this really jerk-ass, you know,
twerp,
who still, that was pretty cool. He was, yeah, I liked, for some reason, the I really liked the whole thing.
Skull, I liked, I think that's what Chris is talking about, not liking the art, and I agree with him.
I didn't care for the art, but I liked the story.
I did like the story as well.
I really liked the part where Thor was like, one way or another, we're drinking together tonight. It'll either be here or in Valhalla, so let's do this. And then he just chops that fucking frost giant in half with his axe. Yeah. So I liked it a lot.
Like the issue sounds way more interesting when you guys talk about it than when I read it. When I read it, I was just like,
I enjoyed it.
The way it was worded.
I mean, I don't know how long Laufey's been dead since he's supposed to be Loki's dad.
Yeah.
I thought that Laufey in the comics got killed like during. I thought he died whenever Odin found Loki.
Yeah, but that might also be a retcon.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because remember, for a long time, Loki was like Odin's natural born son, and it was only they went back on it because he wasn't, and then he was, and now he's not again, and he's not from JMS's Thor stuff.
Right
now he's the half frost giant again.
Yeah.
So, that was interesting. The thing that I didn't like about the 25th issue was I just want to know what Nick Fury whispered to Thor.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was just annoyed when they do that gimmick. I hate that whisper shit.
Like, don't tease this shit out too long.
It's just, I'm
fine with everything else. It's just like, it better be like worth the wait, whatever it is.
Well, and I personally, I'm very curious about what it is too, because let's move on to Thor number one. When Thor tells Odin what it is that Nick Fury said, and Odin can't pick up Mjolnir anymore.
Okay, that's interesting. I hadn't interpreted it like that. Okay.
I thought
no one could.
No, I don't think any of the Asgardians except... Okay, we'll get into this here in just a second, yeah. But I don't think any of the primary Asgardians can because something that they have all been involved with, when looked at in a certain light, could show them to be unworthy.
They sent a secret team of X-Men to Krakoa.
Yeah, you know.
Another super soldier.
But
that's great.
That all of them and Professor Xavier and Reed Richards like committed some mass conspiracy.
But you know, and then of course they show the new Thor.
But they show Frigga looking at the hammer and approaching it. But obviously that is way super tease, and she is not the new Thor, unless she is, which would be hilarious.
Well, see, I kind of think that she might be.
Well, I mean, she's the only other Asgardian that... She was the only Asgardian that had not tried to pick it up that was there.
Right. And...
But then why does her...
I mean...
But her hair color change? Why would her hair color change?
Yeah, she's blonde.
Frigga?
I thought she was brown-headed.
Yeah, she's got, like, brown hair, but that could be a fucking...
I mean...
Headdress.
Just, I don't know. It's magic. Who cares?
Well, that's very true, too.
Maybe in order to lift the power of Thor, you got to have rockin' blonde hair. Unless you're Storm in Marvel versus DC.
Oh.
I mean, I guess it's not Roz, because Roz ain't picking up no hammer on the moon. Not unless she had a spacesuit on and we just couldn't see it.
Maybe.
Don't they just show a hand? Is the hand covered? I'm excited for the second issue, because I want to see Thor do something.
For the new Thor, Thor. I'm still going with Jane. So.
You think it's Jane? I mean, Jane could be on Asgardia.
She is. I thought they took her up there
last time.
So, and I figured they would just probably, you know, take her to the moon.
Oh, that'd be super interesting.
And, you know, she doesn't have hair now, so she can have anything.
That's right, it grew back, blonde.
Yeah, so...
Better and blonder.
I don't know. That was always my thought, was her.
Yeah.
Because of movies.
True.
And they, you know, they set her up that way. They set it up where it's like, you know, magic can't fix what I have, and so... It's like,
that's
it's
not, super interesting.
She's not gonna, she's just gonna be superhero with cancer.
She's going to be Captain Marvel.
Yeah, I was going to say, she's going to be Captain Marvel.
I don't know. The book is consistently interesting, and even if I think that the 25th issue was kind of like, I don't know. Like, it was a setup. Essentially, that 25th issue was a setup for the skull to be there. I don't think he originally planned to renumber it.
Right. I think it was just, this is not, just because Thor: God of Thunder is over does not mean that these stories are over.
Yeah, and, you know, they talk about that a little bit in the letters page. This is the thing, guys. We're going to have to get used to this, I think. It's like, once something reaches 25 issues, they think it's going to scare off any of the movie business, and they're just going to reset it with the number one.
I agree with you. It seems they're going to be doing that a lot. Did All New X-Men get renumbered? I don't remember. What's it on?
It's on, like, 33 or 34, I think.
I'm sure it'll be.
It is an uncovered hand.
Okay, so it's a bare hand with, like, just lady fingers?
Well, when All New X-Men is canceled eventually, then... Yes.
All New X-Men's doing okay, I think.
I know, but it just...
But when Bendis is done with that story, it's going to be canceled.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like New Avengers was essentially canceled when he was done with it.
But, you know, it's like All New Captain America also came out this week, which it's funny that it's called All New Captain America, but it's just Thor. which, that issue's popular. Like, Jordan actually sold out of it. People are very excited for Falcon to be Captain America for some reason. Not that, you know, I have anything against the Falcon, trust me. Been a big Falcon fan for a long time. That's why I kind of wonder if this fits. At the same time, it's Remender, so I'm not even going to see because it's Remender.
Just for clarity's sake, she is blonde as fuck in this book.
Oh, see, I interpreted that as her hair being white.
Chris is back.
So, Chris, just I just pulled up the book too.
It's an uncovered hand.
Freya, yeah, it's an uncovered hand, and Freya's hair is blonde.
Oh, wait, that's Freya or Frigga?
Freya, the All Mother.
Yeah, God, why does everyone got to do that?
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, ancient culture.
No, and that's who I think it is. I don't think it's Frigga. I think it's Freya.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. I still think it's Jane.
I don't know. The pictures make it look too young.
Well, yeah, but...
Yeah, they're immortal. Maybe she just decided she got tired of looking old. Maybe she's going to have a secret identity and keep it a mystery from everybody and have to, like, change back from Thor whenever she's going to, like, sit in her magic chair.
Well, I mean, she won't have much to do now because Odin's like, fuck you, woman. I'm back. Sit your ass down. I mean, you know, kind of.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I still want to know what the fuck the serpent's doing.
He's playing chess.
Is he staying in the cabin? Did Odin let him leave too? Because it doesn't look like he locked up whenever he left.
Nah, dude, the door's off the hinges.
Yeah.
Dogs are all over the yard.
Be like, what's his face in the Inhumans?
The unknown? Or no. The unseen? Unspoken. The unspoken.
No. What? Black Bolt's brother.
Oh, Maximus.
Maximus. Where he's going to be kind of an adversarial.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay.
I like that they were kind of making Maximus not completely evil, but now it seems like they're going to swing the other way. We'll see.
I think he's just insane. I don't think he's evil.
I think he's evil.
And he's very definitely evil in those old Fantastic Four issues.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm talking about now.
Yeah. Like, now no longer, I'm going to kill my brother. It's, I'm going to depose my brother.
You know, right to back to back, I read that Fantastic Four annual and New Avengers. It was like two completely, totally different interpretations of Dr. Doom.
I can't wait.
Oh, man. Huh?
It's a comic book. It's a
comic book.
Well, we can briefly talk about New Avengers through before that first issue with Thanos on the cover, I guess. The whole versus the JSA thing. I think that book improved. I think it found its voice again towards the very, very end.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, yeah.
Yep. It was like for a while we said it switched places with Avengers.
Yeah, and Infinity it definitely did.
Yeah, but it came back.
It's like you can only write one consistently good.
Well, so just write one.
Just write one.
I still do feel like Avengers World is the best Avengers book, pure Avengers book out there.
It's the only one where something happens every month.
Mm-hmm.
So they do need to, like, that's probably going to get canceled too.
Yeah, I think it will.
They're trying, but it's 115th place.
They're really trying. It's just not. The sales are like abysmal.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, they just have too many books with that name in it. I mean, the same thing happened to Avengers Undercover, and that's what's happening this fall. It's like, instead of like Marvel Now, all new Marvel Now. It's all new Avengers Now, or just Avengers Now.
It's Avengers Now, yeah.
And that's what, you know, Thor is supposed to be part of. All new Captain America is supposed to be part of. Superior Iron Man is going to be part of. And presumably, like, some other books that are spinning out of Axis.
Yeah.
So, that's going to be fun decoding what happens in Axis, because I absolutely don't give a shit. Like, I love that it's, like, Act 1, Part 1 when it comes out next week. Hopefully each act is only three parts. Mm. Man, they're spreading Dr. Doom out too thin to too many people that don't know how to write him.
Well, I
mean, that's the prize, man. You got to keep that shit pure. He's not fucking Darkseid, which you just march out.
I know.
You know?
I know.
Like, I agree. Who do we have that's a threat? Well, Darkseid people know from cartoons, so let's just use him.
Right. Tom Grummett did the art, by the way.
Yeah, I know. I looked at one of the pages. It didn't really look like him.
It doesn't.
Because I was like, ooh, Tom Grummett. Love Tom Grummett. So sadly, we must leave you guys. But in the wait between episodes, there's always things for you guys to do. Such as go to our website at www.planbanter.com, home of Plan Banter. You can find us on Twitter at Plan Banter, and you can email us at planbanter@gmail.com. We also have a Facebook page, facebook.com/planbanter. Go like us. And while you're liking us on there, why don't you go like Chris Kinzel Photography? And everyone be sure to check out the Twitter for Chris's photography at Kinzel Photos. You know, if you want to listen to some music, you can find Jason's band, Clinch, at Clinch Band, and clinchmusic.com and reverbnation.com/clinch, and also facebook.com/clinch. You can also find our friends Engineer Nerd of tvandfilmtoys.com. You can find them on Twitter at Engineer Nerd, and you can also listen to them on the Action Figure Blues podcast, which is found at actionfigureblues.com. You can follow them on Twitter at AFBlues. Our friend Grey Matter Splat, at Grey Matter Splat. Our friend David at FakeEyes22. Our friend Lemon Juice McGee at Lemon Juice McGee. And our very special pal, Newton Gimmick, at Newton Gimmick, him of InfiniteHollywood.com, and a sometimes contributor to UnderscoopFire.com. Shazam!